A Wreath of Reeds by Laughing Pineapple. Read by Jack's Long Coat. A Disco Elysium fanfic. Author's tags: Chance Meetings. Yearning. Academia. The opposite of academia. On the Shore. Summary: Staban, touch grass. Grass, touch Staban. A spring wind ruffles Staban's sweaty hair as he sits among the reeds on the island's beach, north of the sea fort. This pilgrimage is weighing on him. He came here hitching a ride on a fisherwoman's boat to grab the coattails of the last vestiges of the revolution. This place was lived in just weeks ago. The coffee pot still feels warm. He came here to see, to understand. To pick up the torch, perhaps, from the remnants of this man who heard Mazov's living voice, kindling a connection they missed when Dros was alive and walking the streets of Martinez. Staban's journal sports 14 new pages of crammed notes and theoretical observations, ranging from the yarn of Comrade Dros's socks to the disappointingly rote ideology peddled by the books found in his hideout, and the pervasive sense of loss that haunts these concrete walls. This work is the good stuff, turbo-conceptual, with a nod to the underlying principles of economic anti-realism, and what awaits at home is, rightfully, an adoring peer review. But this loss, this haunting, will not stay fixed on the page. It condenses from dead air into the same black primordial ooze that lurks at the back of his thoughts. It seeps into his skin now, blossoming stains for everyone to see. A mark of loneliness, of uselessness. Staban was right to talk himself into a pilgrimage. The fort is a sanctuary, a shrine to defeat. Hope for a free and fair world ended here, 50 years ago, 2 weeks ago, right now. If there is any hope to be gleaned from it, Staban, with all his theory, is not equipped to see it. In the end, he had to leave. Now that he is back outside under the tepid early April sun, with hours to kill before the fisherwoman's return, the man is nursing a headache in an empty pate. Not a word forms in the recesses of his thought cabinet. He traces the star and antlers on the wet sand and watches as the waves take it away. Once more, the upside-down star for the toppling of the old order. Around it, a wreath of antlers for a new society above and in accordance with the natural world. Another wave comes. The sand realigns itself into chaotic nothingness. Again, as soon as his fingers stop hurting from the cold. Again, the sea claims it all. It is a rhetorically charged gesture for an audience of none. For a change, he draws the symbol a little further back, at the edge of the shoreline. The sea is calm, and it takes some time for the waves to reach it. Stretching out on a flat, sunlit rock, as the sea of history ebbs and flows, Staban falls asleep. In his dream, cold, wet algae are strangling him, holding him down against the earth. He escapes their grasp and runs away as fast as his skinny legs carry him, soon stumbling against a rocky step, pushing himself to climb it only to find another step, and another. He coughs to catch his breath, leaning against a stone pillar that supports this strange floating staircase, and looks up. Behold, a vast spiral tower to reach the skies. The tower, the impossible tower, a future unbuilt. How harmonious its arches! In his dream, like a less nationalist, less colonialist Cornelius Gordy, or so he fancies himself, Staban makes the climb. Uneven rock steps turn into marble, concrete, steel, aluminum, wire, glass, pure thought. Past the clouds, Staban at last can breathe. The thin air suits him fine. Between him and the stars lies only an alluring veil of pale. His lungs are full. "How far you have come," says a feeble voice that reaches him from somewhere beyond his back, sounding as if it came out of a morass of reeds, a hiss, a clicking of sticks. With your imagination alone. Thank you, Staban answers with a faint smile. It would be remiss to be impolite. There is no capacity in me for compliments, the voice says. There should be no capacity in me for this, yet this moment exists because of you. Do not thank me. Our meeting defies the atoms. As the young man turns to see his visitor, he is faced with a constellation of dark eyes like planets fixed in a chitin surface that fills the sky. The creature, a vision, a colossus, stands on reed-like legs that reach down to the ocean and steps forward 1 kilometer at a time, set on its own secret migration. It occurs to him, then, that this is all a trick of perspective. His tower isn't worth much. The insect looms over him, but can't be taller than a nearby tree. Yet they both touch the heavens, a sea of clouds below them. Is it not abominable to travel this far from the flow of one's own lymph? It asks, with a touch of concern in its otherworldly voice. What perspective do you have from this far up here? I bend my legs when I want to eat a grass. Can you bend this tower you made? You are not seeing the bumblebees buzz among the white clovers in bloom. Bumblebees? I don't. Hold on, in April? To his credit, Staban pauses here. Some part of him considers silence. The rest, however, perseveres. In their critique of Valgardsson's treaty on oil trade in Insulinde, Lussier and Balloway famously hinge their argument on the metaphor of the bumblebee in June. The bumblebees have not read either. They came for the flowers. Have you ever felt the rustling of reeds caress the sensory receptors of your skin? The really fluffy part on top. Staban cannot say. He is stuck on bumblebees in April, and a scathing rebuttal to Lucia and Balloway's critique. But he still stretches out his hand, in that trick of perspective in his dream where he is at once above the clouds and lying on a sunlit rock on a cold beach. A rustling of reeds. The discs and corpuscles under his skin fire off a salve of neural impulses to his cerebral cortex. They speak of rows of sharp leaves and ticklish soft plumes, and a drop of burnt caramel that fills the cavernous recesses of his head for 1 single blessed moment of totality. Lussier and Balloway can wait. Staban reaches out again, his body rushing ahead of his brain in an intoxicating scramble, but the creature pulls back like a gust of wind in the rushes. There is no burnt caramel in the air anymore. It smells of fear. You are an interesting portent to pull me into this strange world of thoughts, but I would destroy you, and you me. Live. Smell the flowers, and we may yet meet again. The creature adds, in a reedy whisper, perhaps in this same world, now fixed forever into something other than matter, gray and brown printed on top of each other under the printing machine. Live, says Staban, but he is alone. He opens his eyes on a clear late afternoon sky. There is a storm mounting in the south, but it does not reach the sunset. Turning his head to stare at the sea, he takes in the muted turquoise, orange, and violet on the horizon. For a moment, he sees them as they are, not a stand-in for the flag of a faraway country, but a miracle on the sea. A strange yearning mixes with the inflamed synovial fluid in his joints and the stiff hellscape of his back. Come tomorrow, it may all pass. The end.